Blog Talk Radio.
I do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me till the end. Whatever I can, I'll do for you.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of the New Directions University, along with my co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, the Story Lady of ProfitableStorytelling.com. We have got a great show lined up for you. Are you there, Rhonda? Uh-oh, can find Rhonda. Not so good. Well, Cornelius, I think you're there, aren't you?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, I am so glad to have you here today. I didn't know where Miss Rhonda is. She was here a second ago, and I tried to unmute her, and then we lost her. So hopefully she'll be joining us in a little bit.
There we are.
I'm
here, but I'm sorry. I was having technical issues. I couldn't hear the show. I didn't know if I was heard, so I called back in. Hi. I didn't abandon you.
Hi. I'm so glad you could join us.
Oh, I am so glad. I was like, I'm listening to the whole music, and all of a sudden, dead nothing. I'm going, huh.
I have been looking forward to today's show for a few weeks now, so I've been really excited about this one in particular. Mm-hmm. So, Rhonda, you want to do the honors, or shall I?
Well, I'll let you read the bio, but I just got to say, I was so excited because, of course, as somebody who is, I'm always gritting about website accessibility and the CAPTCHA codes and Flash and all these other things, and you know, because they're hard for me as a blind person, and I'm so excited to find out even how I can make my website better and how we all can. And Cornelius also is someone who's visually impaired, has his experience, and he really started out on his journey because of the problem he saw in the marketplace.
Interesting. Well, I can't wait to hear how he came about being a specialist in website accessibility. Cornelius is a young person who, like Rhonda said, does have a disability. He is legally blind, but he graduated with full honors from Bainbridge College in Bainbridge, Georgia, majoring in computer information systems. Now, several years ago, his local rehabilitation counselor introduced him to the Georgia High School high-tech program, and he was one of the first students involved when the program was first implemented in Southwest Georgia. Today, he is someone who specializes in making websites more accessible for people with disabilities. And being someone who is disabled myself, I'm not legally blind, but I have issues with my legs and my feet. I don't walk so good. Didn't walk for a number of years. This is something that has really been near and dear to my heart over the years because I need lots of things changed for me, and for many years, I need a whole lot more changed for me. So welcome to the show, Cornelius. I can't wait to see what kind of advice you have for our listeners today.
Excellent. Glad to be here today.
So I take it you got interested in this field out of a need like Rhonda.
Oh, definitely. I've been involved in the area of web accessibility and disability services ever since the year 2000, actually. Ever since I graduated from high school back in 2000, it's an issue I faced all my life because I've been drawn to computers ever since I was 12.
Wow. And so I know that using just about any kind of technology is a challenge to our blind. Rhonda has a continuing terrible situation with cell phones.
Most phones
are PDAs that don't talk nicely to her.
Right, definitely.
Why is it that so few people seem to even think about this issue when it affects so many people?
It's more of an area, from my years of dealing with it, I chalk most of it up to, it falls into two camps, either ignorance camp or the malice camp. I've seen it fall into either one of those two. Thankfully, it's just more people don't know, and that's the more the people that I just say chalk it up to ignorance. They just don't know the issues that people with disabilities face on a daily basis. and they don't know how to address them. And those are also the same, and then a more malice camp is those are the people that know the people with disabilities out there, but they think that we're not really a viable market.
Gotcha. And you know, I teach relationship marketing. This show is called Relationship Marketing 101. If you're going to go out and really use relationship marketing to its fullest, you can't be in that ignorance group, that's for sure, and expect to succeed. You've really got to understand your audience, and you've got to understand that people with disabilities are going to need you to make some accommodations, period.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they want, what I've seen is that even those who do try to do something to make accommodations tend to fall into a couple of different categories. There's those who say, okay, I'll do it, but they do it kind of begrudgingly.
Yeah.
So they do it sort of fast, if you will. And then there's those who really try to do it the right way and will bend over backwards to really make sure that they're accommodating people in a way that is going to work. As opposed to, okay, I'll do it, but they're going to constantly put you down because they had to do it.
Right.
That's not the right way to do it either.
No, definitely not. And I'm wishing we have more from that first group of those that actually really want to go above and beyond the call of duty.
Yeah.
Exactly. And because there are so few people from that first group, I really see it as a way to strengthen your relationship and differentiate yourself from your competition. Very few people are thinking about making their websites more accessible. And so it's really easy to get a jump on your competition in the search engines just by doing that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the search engines are going to start cracking down on it, particularly Google in the future.
Well, you know, Google has a website accessibility rule. They put it into place in May of 2007, and they call it the Google Handicapped Accessible Search Rule.
Right.
Trying to remember what my link is for it. I believe it's askggg.com/handicap. Askggg.com/handicap will let you read the rule that Google has out there. And that rule...
Can tell you about it.
Yes? Say that again, Rhonda?
Cornelius
can tell you all about it.
Gotcha. When that rule went into place, I know I had a number of students who all of a sudden had owned the search engines for years. They had like number one, number two rankings for certain keywords. And then all of a sudden, they just fell off the search engines. They couldn't even be found in the first 100 pages. And they're like, what the heck just happened? And it was because of the new Google Handicapped Accessible Search Rule that all of a sudden became a big issue. Their sites weren't doing things the right way according to this new rule. And Google didn't give you any warning. They just all of a sudden dinked you in your search engine ranking.
Yep. It was the ultimate Google slap.
It really was.
Right.
And so,
I call it the handy slap.
The rule really wants you to pay attention to people both visual impairments as well as people with some sort of a hearing impairment. So it's more than one thing that you need to take into consideration, and that's what I want us to talk about today.
Okay.
For people getting ready to put up a website, what should they be thinking about, Cornelius?
Okay. Your major disabilities that apply to the web fall into four major categories. One of them is actually just now really being researched by the government and accessibility experts, but the one that most people associate with web accessibility seems to be visual, which is people who are either blind or low vision like myself. Another category is hearing, which are people who are either deaf or hard of hearing. People who have physical disabilities, which are people who are in wheelchairs. And the other one that they're just doing some research on is cognitive, which are people who also have one of those hidden disabilities.
Ah, okay. So let's take each one of those kind of separately.
Okay.
Let's take the first one first.
Okay. The first one is visual. Now, that is the one I know that I live on a daily basis. Me and Rhonda both live on a daily basis.
Yep.
That is people who are either blind or people who are low vision. Now, people who are blind, a lot of your listeners may or may not have heard of special technology that people who are blind use to access the web. Well, number one thing I hear from people who are fully able-bodied is the fact that they didn't think someone who's blind could even use a computer. And when I explain,
too funny.
I know, same here. I get that too.
Find dad.
Yeah.
Well, the people who are blind use a special type of software program on their computers called a screen reader. And just like its name implies, what it does is, and you got to really love hearing a robotic voice over and over.
Yes, but, I can imagine.
But what it does is it reads the content on the screen and in the operating system to the person who is blind. Also, another caveat, people who actually are dyslexic use screen readers as well. But what it reads the content from top to bottom, left to right. So let's apply that to the web. So that means when someone who goes to your website, a screen reader can handle text with no problem. If it's just plain text, you just got a basic plain text site, it has no problem. When it actually hits things that are not text, such as forms, tables, charts, graphs, things like that, you have a major issue if your site is not properly designed. Now, what a screen reader looks for, like, for example, let's say if I had some images on a site, and the web, and a lot of webmasters are notorious for using images as links and putting important information on those images. Now, let's say if I'm someone who's blind and I come to your site and I'm trying to actually give you my money and purchase something from you, and the main link to do that is an image, and I have no clue what that image actually is of, and there's no description of it, I can't give you my money, thus you just lost some revenue.
Exactly. Now, is there anything you can do other than not use images for your links?
No. You can actually, and that's one thing a lot of people think about web accessibility. They like to take a separate but equal approach. That approach has never worked in life ever.
No, that's true.
What some people have done, and Amazon.com was a very poignant example that web accessibility experts are still using today. Amazon.com created a special version of their site called Amazon Access a while back. And it was an all-text version of the Amazon.com site. When people went to this site and wanted to search for books, they noticed a major problem. The Amazon Access site had a separate database than the Amazon main site. So you
not so good.
So you couldn't find the same books on the Amazon Access site that you could find on regular Amazon, and it got panned badly by the disability community as a shining example of separate but equal does not work. The major focus of accessibility, web accessibility, is not to dumb down your site the way it can't be used. It's basically to enhance the site so everyone can use it, including people with disabilities.
Gotcha. Big important thing to remember. So you don't want two separate sites. You want one site that works for everybody.
Right. The main thing to think is equal access, not separate access.
Well, and if you think about it from a relationship standpoint, if you're building one site for those with disabilities and one site for everybody else, now you're really treating them as being different as opposed to they're just like everybody else. They just have different challenges than you.
Right.
That's it.
Right. And
so
from
a relationship standpoint, it doesn't make sense to try separate but equal.
Right, and from a relationship standpoint, a lot of people with disabilities see is, well, they don't care about my business, and so I'm going to go elsewhere. And the one thing about the disability market is when they find brands and companies that care about them, they are notoriously loyal.
Oh, yeah.
And
kidding.
When you build a relationship with the disability community, they not only tell other friends of theirs that have disabilities, they also tell their family members. They tell their personal attendants if they have them. They tell a variety of other people that are around them.
So you're not just gaining more income from those with disabilities, but from lots of other people who support them as well.
Right. And that goes the same way if you are alienating the disability community or ignoring them, you're also alienating and ignoring those around them.
Right.
That makes really good sense. So Amazon is obviously an example of a site that doesn't do it right. Do you have one that does do it well?
Okay. Actually, in the United States, we've had quite a few. Well, in the United States, the government actually has mandated that federal websites, we have a law called Section 508 on the books, It's been around since it went into law 2001, and what it mandates is that all federal websites have to be accessible. Now, they're getting better at it, and they're not fully all accessible as it, relates to
like
it.
The White House.
Right, yeah, the White House, they made some mistakes because the White House was actually going for the flashier side. They use a lot of flash technology videos and some other things that just have inherent issues in them. But one site that our corporate site, we make usage of accessibility features, the disabilityinfo.gov website. They make heavy usage of accessibility features. That's actually, if you're a person with disability, it's the de facto go-to website of the U.S. government for people with disabilities in the United States. They've done quite a bit. Now, they're doing some refinements now, but they've done a pretty good job of keeping that site accessible. And there's a variety of other major corporations. Radio Shack is in the process of making, I believe they're finished now. Radio Shack is making their site accessible to people with disabilities. But if they may or may not be finished, because I saw something a few weeks ago saying they were nearing completion on it. The problem is a lot of the major retailers that you would think would be accessible are not. And actually, one of them turned into the world's largest accessibility lawsuit last year, which was the one that has reverberated around the world, and that was the one where Target stores got sued by a person with a disability. Now, Target is a blatant example of what not to do. It actually was a $30 million settlement.
Really?
Target. Yes. There was a college student who was blind in California, and what he did was he kept contacting Target saying, I'm trying to purchase from the Target website, and Target blew him off. Every time he contacted them saying, I'm trying to, they just basically kept blowing him off. So what he did was he teamed up with some other people with disabilities, and with the National Federation for the Blind, they filed a class action lawsuit against Target. And Target actually had the audacity to get in a courtroom and try to argue that the Americans with Disabilities Act and disability laws do not apply to the Internet because the Internet is not a public place.
You have got to be kidding me.
It's not.
So my goodness. That lawyer should be shot.
It went down in flames, and Target lost miserably. And their reputation and relationship with the disability community has not only been destroyed as part of the settlement. What Target is trying to do to build back up its relationship with the community is it's hired a PR firm, and they're going to be making a lot of donations to disability-related organizations trying to build back up their PR in the community.
Wow. That is huge.
And they have to make the site accessible.
So if we look at that lawsuit and the Americans with Disabilities Act, it's much bigger than just we want to build relationships and so we do want to take people with disabilities into consideration. It's more akin to with the laws that we have in place, like the Americans with Disabilities Act, we actually have a duty to do something to make our sites more accessible to those with disabilities.
Right. Definitely.
Okay. So I imagine it gets expensive to have your site designed in a way that works for people with disabilities and other people equally well.
That's what a lot of times when it comes to web accessibility, that's been one of the major areas where the companies that don't want to adhere to it, they've used that as an excuse not to do so. They've tied it to excuse, but... Our firm has actually created a way to actually bring the cost of it down, and that's so basically we're removing the excuse completely.
And what is it that you guys do that brings the cost down?
What we've actually done is we've created a project called AccessibleNet, and what it's designed to do is it's the most ambitious web accessibility project that man has ever created, and what we're actually trying to do is. Create or redesign more than 100,000 accessible websites over the next several years. And
we're
not only going to create or redesign them. The number one question people get is saying, okay, how do I tell people that I'm accessible? Or where we've also created a seal that's going to go on every site where people can verify the accessibility. Also, we're creating a special online directory that's going to be called Shop Accessible, where people, it's going to be basically a massive online directory of accessible sites that have been created through the project.
That's great. Now, how does that save costs for people?
Normally, web accessibility, when someone comes to do web accessibility analysis or something like that, it normally starts around $1,500 and up. We've managed to actually cut that price more than in half, depending upon the size of the site.
Wow.
So,
how do you do that?
It's because basically a lot of the automated ways that we do it and the fact that we own a lot, we actually own our own evaluation team of people with disabilities that we also compensate on evaluating sites and helping us make them accessible.
Well, that's a good way to do it.
Yep. So we created the nation's first nationwide panel of people with disabilities, their family members, and other caregivers, and we actually compensate them like I guess you could say like a mystery shopping model. We actually compensate them on evaluating these sites.
That's great.
And
now,
also, sorry.
We should tell people where your company is located online so that they can go check it out. AskGGG.com/Butler, AskGGG.com/Butler, and the domain name is ButlerNewMedia.com.
Yes, and
anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, and actually on the site, what you'll see is when you go there to really kick off this project, you'll see a special offer that we're basically announcing today, that's kicking off today, that's going to be running for a while, that's going to allow people to have their sites evaluated for an even cheaper rate. It's right there on the front of the site. It's basically offering something that normally costs thousands of dollars, and we're going to be actually doing it for people for $249.
Nice.
So this is actually the build-up. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, I think that was my husband sneezing in the background.
Oh, okay.
I
live in a 43-foot bus, and sometimes close quarters, you can't do a lot about it.
So what we've actually done is basically we've removed the major barrier, which is cost, for people to get their sites accessible.
That is fabulous. I should have you guys take a look at my site, because I have a feeling it is not very accessible, and it's something I really should be thinking more about that. I'll be the first to admit, I've been very lax. But being someone with a disability myself, I know better.
Right.
And I haven't taken the time to do it. So if I haven't taken the time to do it, I can imagine how many other people who don't have disabilities haven't taken the time to do it.
Right. And the one way that people need to understand is the fact that by not being accessible, you're turning away a potential large market that could be actually learning about your products and services and basically becoming your product evangelist and spreading the word about your products.
Absolutely, and especially in my business, where I'm helping people to live the life of their dreams by building a business that uses the power of the internet. For many people with disabilities, that means that they do want their own business or that they have their own business, because it is the better alternative than holding down a regular 9-to-5 job. And so my market has a lot of people with disabilities in it, and I don't see a lot of my competition catering to them.
Right.
So it is a great way to capture a huge market that already exists.
Right. I think one thing that happens with people is they go, the disability market can't be that big and they can't really have that much money now, could they possibly? So, Cornelius, correct people's thinking on exactly how big of a market and how many dollars that we're talking about here.
The disability market in the United States is currently, the Census Bureau currently shows that there are 56 million people in the United States that have a disability. And the estimated spending power of that community is close to $10 trillion right now.
Wow, and that's just the U.S. Holy cow.
Right. So if you're going to go, well, the system, I don't have to be accessible, whatever, you're actually shooting yourself in the foot as far as a way of bringing in extra revenue plus finding a market that is automatically loyal to anybody who will make an accommodation, because, well, partly it's, there are so few choices. So, you know, if you become one of those choices, it's really great.
Right.
Wow. And one of the things I noticed on your website was you've got a partner page, and you talk about your strategic alliance programs. Now, online, people know me as the JB Queen because I've done so many joint ventures that usually are really big, very noticeable kinds of joint ventures.
Oh, yeah.
I'm all about strategic alliances. Tell us about your strategic alliance program.
Okay. The way our strategic alliance program works is that we team up with people who have access to large markets, also lists. We team up with web development firms and others who would like to basically, rather than having to learn everything that's required to market to the disability community and create accessible sites, we team up with them and we basically become their outsourced partner. And basically, whenever people send us work, we complete the work and we can either handle all client relations and you basically get a commission or a fee for doing so, for helping us.
Great. So if you're already in a business like a web design firm or a graphic design firm or something along those lines, this would be a good way for you to be able to offer web accessibility services without having to be knowledgeable in how to do that yourself.
Right.
Awesome. And we talked a little bit about the visually impaired. But what about some of those other categories of impairments that we need to be considering on our website?
I was going to go ahead and finish up with vision. One thing about vision that you need to know, once you have to actually describe your images for people who are visually impaired. There's a tag called the alt tag, and what it does, it allows you to describe images and some other non-text elements. So a screen reader, when it comes across it, it will actually read out what you have put as alt text. Make sure you put truthful alt text, not just to flip someone up. Be truthful alt text. And Google actually looks for alt text. The Google bot does. So you make sure you use alt text.
Gotcha. What? Anything else for the visually impaired that we need to be looking at?
Make sure that your site can be navigated. When it comes to navigational elements on your site, one thing that can annoy someone who has a screen reader is the fact that the same navigation repeats itself on on every page.
Sorry, it's listening through blah, 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 for like a minute.
That's
before
just
you get
a
to
little
listen.
Irritating there, Rhonda?
Just a little bit.
There is a method called the skip navigation element, and basically it uses what's known as a named anchor, which is something you can use in Dreamweaver and other web authoring tools. You can put a named anchor in your page and create a link that will skip to that anchor, and you can call that link skip to content, and I'll let you skip over all of that navigation that appears on every single page.
Oh, nice. I've never even heard of that before.
Yep, it's called skip navigation.
Pretty interesting.
And if you really want to see an eye-opener on it comes to the web, try navigating the web. I know everybody loves using their mouse, but try navigating the web by only using your tab and enter keys. It will open up your eyes to a whole new world.
Oh, yes. Oh, it sure
will. Wow. Yeah, I never thought about trying that. That would be very difficult to do, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And the reason being that the screen readers, a lot of times you are theoretically, if the site's working really well, you can tab to the different fields and the speech is supposed to tell you what you can do in that area or whatever. And just trying it sometimes and see where your cursor lands or if you're sighted and can see it, then you can find out how much fun those of us have when, even with technology, when we're navigating the web.
Well, I do use my screen, my keyboard commands much more so than the average person. So
right.
Alt tab to switch between windows, Control tab to shift between tabs, all of those different things. And I know you're right. When I'm using them within a web page, oh boy, it's really tough.
Yeah.
and if I have a hard time when I'm seeing it, I can imagine how hard it must be for you guys.
Right.
Right.
And the one key thing about, and one key reason that we created AccessibleNet is because a lot of people pretty much assume they've gotten, they basically read a little bit about web accessibility and pretty much assume that, hey, I'm going to do this myself and I'm just going to pop it in real quick and add a few tags and do this and it's accessible. Never assume that you got everything. That's why we created AccessibleNet, so you can actually have a professional look at the site and tell you, okay, this is going to be a problem, this isn't a problem. And basically we serve as someone that can hold your hand along the way.
Gotcha. I would think that if you're talking about a more traditional site, like an article directory that has primarily text, it wouldn't be as challenging to create it as an accessible site for visually impaired folks. I would think that the new Web 2.0 style sites, like the social networks and those types of sites, would present even greater challenges from a design perspective. Is that true?
That's 100% true, because there was a report that came out last year, and every major social networking site failed when it came to accessibility.
Yeah, I would expect so. It would be very, very challenging to make those sites accessible because, by their nature, they're not text-based. They are, you know, graphics and video and all those things that are difficult for someone with a visual impairment. How do you handle those sites?
Now, those sites, actually, there's a variety of things they could actually do better because it actually inspired some of the things that those sites were doing have inspired people in the disability community, entrepreneurs with disabilities, because I know of at least, I can't say who they are right now, but I know of at least 5 different entrepreneurs that are trying to create disability-related social networking sites because they just got so angry with MySpace and Facebook and some of those for ignoring them, basically.
Well, let me know when it comes up because I'll be all over it.
Right, because now the most well-known disability, if anyone actually, a lot of people were shocked when I told them that there actually exists a social networking site of people with disabilities out there. Have any of you ever heard of Disaboom?
No.
Yeah.
It's the first one to actually launch. It actually got it made history in the disability community because it was the first disability-based company to get massive venture capital funding. It is the first of its kind disability-based social networking site, and that's Disaboom.com.
And what's different about Disaboom?
It is geared, like, if you want to actually start communicating with the disability community, that site is full of people with disabilities. That is a disability-based social networking site. By people with disabilities, ran by people with disabilities, for people with disabilities.
And about the design of their site, is there anything significantly different about it?
They've done some things to make the site accessible. That's another issue that we have in the disability community, too. Even some of our sites in the community, they sometimes will cut corners, but Disaboom has really, really corrected a lot of issues that they had in the past. But just about every major web authoring system or any kind of system can be made accessible if they take the time to do so. Like on social networking sites, like whenever you upload images, describe those images so people can actually know what is going on in those pictures. When it comes to when it comes to videos and things like that, allow people to put transcripts there of what's going on in that video.
Okay, not just the video itself.
Right, because watching a video, it may be useful for me and everybody that can hear, but someone who's deaf or hard of hearing, it's pointless to them. They need to be able to know what's going on in that video they need to know what the audio feed of that video is talking about.
I'm just going over and looking at some of their images to see what's different about them and how they're doing it. Oh, yeah, very different. They've got alt image tags on everything.
Right, because its major target is the disability community. They actually, because they were the first, Disaboom, last I heard, they were getting close to 100,000 new sign-ups a month from people with disabilities. That shows you about the loyalty I was talking about earlier. And they also just got, I believe it was about $10 million in venture capital funding to continue because it's basically an experiment that's gone really, really well.
That's fabulous. Let's look at the category after visual impairment. What are the other two that we had?
Okay. If you got your visual and your hearing, you got your people who have physical disabilities. Now, a lot of people who may have a physical disability, they may not be able to use the mouse, so you got to make sure your sight, like we mentioned earlier, is keyboard friendly. Now, you have to really make sure your sight is accessible to someone who just is exclusively using a keyboard. And there's numerous keyboard shortcuts that a lot of people may not even know that you can do in any web browser just to use a web browser. Like a lot of people may not even know you can press Alt and D to get to your address bar in your web browser.
Right.
Yep. And I use those keyboard commands, like I said, all the time. All the time.
Yeah, we always have a joke that says basically if you want to know some keyboard shortcuts, ask someone with a disability because we tend to know them, basically. We know a lot of them.
Yeah, I never thought of that, but that would be a really good way to learn keyboard commands. There's a really good summary of keyboard commands on the Microsoft site. I should go see if I could find those real quick.
Okay.
They're keyboard shortcuts. And that's where I learned them from, was from there. And,
right.
Boy, there are just tons of them. And it actually saves me time, even as a sighted person. If you go to askggg.com/keyboard, askggg.com/keyboard, that's a list of keyboard shortcuts. And I imagine those are some of the keyboard shortcuts that you're talking about.
Right. A lot of people... And Microsoft actually commissioned a study that showed that people are more productive. I know it's going to come across because I'm keyboard biased, but it's actually evidence to back it up. Microsoft commissioned a study, and it showed that people were, I forgot what percentage it was, they were percentage more productive if they just exclusively used their keyboard.
Because you don't have to constantly be moving your hands all over the place. I know I'm more productive when I use my keyboard as opposed to the keyboard and the mouse.
Right.
I use my mouse
for
very little other than when it's absolutely necessary because it does save a lot of time, probably more than an hour a day.
Right.
And, you know, the thing is with the keyboard, it's not, yes, I mean, those of us visually impaired, you think maybe of that first, but imagine if you have trouble moving your arm or something and that switching around to go to the mouse to the keyboard, and or if you have fine motor control issues, using a mouse isn't exactly the easiest thing in the world. You could just touch it and your hand would move and you'd end up with your mouse going all the way off the screen or something.
Right.
So it really does make a lot of sense for a number of different types of disabilities.
Well, and I think that's what really got me started using my keyboard as opposed to the mouse, because for so long I was in a hospital bed or a wheelchair and I would work on my computer from my hospital bed. I didn't really have a lot of choice in that matter. That was just a way of life for me. And it was really tough at the time to find a mouse that I could use in a way that didn't require it to be on a tabletop. And if you're in a hospital bed, you can't exactly use a mouse easily on your bed. It doesn't work.
Right.
You know, it gets pulled up in the covers. Eventually, I found a really cool mouse that was one that was meant for presenters that could be waved around in the air and it would work just fine even without a tabletop. But when that mouse finally gave out, I couldn't find another one. And so that's what really got me used to use keyboard as opposed to a mouse. It was not a matter of choice at the time. It was a matter of necessity. And then when I realized how much easier and how much faster everything was doing it that way, I kind of continued doing it that way on an ongoing basis.
Right.
So... what do you need to think about from your website if you're really catering to people like me and you guys who use keyboards instead of a mouse?
The one thing that you have to really pay attention to is a feature in HTML called a tab index. And now that's something that you really because there's no tool or anything out there that'll let you just quickly insert them. So that's something you really have to love code to do. You have to love going into code, and basically you have to add a tab index to different elements of your site, and it allows you to control the literally allows you to control the tab order of your site. So that means every time you hit the tab key, you can control what link it goes to.
Oh, interesting. And that's all done just in HTML?
Right. That has to be done in the code because there's nothing out there that will just let you easily add a tab index. There's, like, no point-and-click wizard to do it.
Gotcha. What else do you need to think about?
Now, when it comes to the major area when it comes to physical is going to be basically keyboard access. Now, also when it comes to people who use physical, a lot of people may not. Have you ever seen a Puff and Sif wand that attaches to someone's head?
Oh, I have.
Yes, so that's another reason why you have to consider people with keyboard when it comes to keyboard accessibility, because that's the only way they use the web. Is using the keyboard, so and they can get tired out if your site's not easy to navigate or you don't have a good tab order or a good flow of the site.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't have even remembered to think about that, but you're right.
Right, and a lot of it, when it comes to Web 2.0, people make heavy usage of Flash. It depends upon what version of Flash you are using. They have Adobe, and when it was Macromedia, Flash has progressively gotten better over the years, but it's still not really what I would say to be super-duper accessible. So what you have to do when it comes to Flash is you have to provide an equivalent of the Flash content in a non-Flash format primarily.
Well, and, you know, this is a kind of one of my big pet peeves. I see so often, especially with restaurants and offline businesses, they make heavy use of Flash, and it makes no sense for them to do because the majority of their users and their visitors are going to come from cell phones and other kinds of PDAs
right.
that are, for the most part, not Flash-enabled.
Right.
So those restaurants that have their gorgeous menus and their beautiful websites that are all done in Flash are setting themselves up to send their visitors to somebody else's restaurant to eat dinner because they can't see their menu on their cell phone.
Right.
I deal with this all the time because we eat out every night. And usually we find the restaurant we're going to eat in my cell phone. And I think it takes me 3 to 5 restaurants every day just find one that I can potentially see well enough on my phone to know whether or not I even want to eat this. And it's a daily issue for me. It drives me crazy. And I keep wondering, when are these restaurant owners and these offline business owners going to wake up and smell the roses and really start designing their sites in a way that's friendly to your cell phone? And it's the same issue with the people with any kind of a disability using their website. It's not just for cell phones. So by making that one correction, it actually opens up 2 markets, not just one.
Right. And that's and that's something you touched on very importantly. By designing your site to be accessible from the get-go, it's easier to transition it to other forms of technology such as PDA, cell phones, and other things. So that saves money in the future so you don't have to actually create multiple versions of the site.
I'm sorry, I'm over here chuckling. My husband has this constant thing that he likes to pick on me for. Everybody who knows me knows that I get my colloquialisms messed up, and I honestly sometimes do it on purpose because he thinks it's funny. I didn't do this one on purpose. Stop and smell the roses, or wake up and smell the coffee, and I'm told that
right.
I need to fix that. So that doesn't bother me. I like me getting him messed up. It gives him a chuckle.
That's right.
Anyway, back to the topic at hand and not colloquialism. But if people are willing to spend money to have their websites designed for cell phone users and PDA users, they see that as a thing that's going to make them money.
Right.
So why do they not see that in doing that, they're also setting themselves up to really make their sites handicapped accessible at the same time? and be willing to spend money on that. That makes no sense to me.
It's all about awareness. A lot of people just don't realize. It's like you say, it's all about awareness.
Really funny. Really funny.
I think they don't realize that the disability community, we have money. Our money is just as green or whatever color your local currency is as yours. And, anybody wants to spend money in a place where they're welcome and where they're going to get appropriate service. And that's just as true for people, whether you have a disability or not, whether you're any particular reason or not, you want to feel that you're going to get good service. And that's what making your site accessible empowers you to do.
Right.
Well, in thinking about it, the AccessibleNet project, I'm just sitting here kind of chuckling to myself. I bet you'd have more business at higher prices marketing AccessibleNet to the people who are interested in making their sites accessible for phones and PDAs.
Mm-hmm.
And you could charge 10 times more money for it, because that they see as being something they'll spend their money on. And it accomplishes the same purpose.
So charge them $2,000 or $3,000 and, for making their site PDA and cell phone accessible, then it'll also serve the disability community. You'll make a pile of money, and everybody will be happy.
Here's the time, Cornelius, where having separate but equal sites might be a good way to do it. One that targets the audience of people wanting to make it accessible for the cell phones and PDA users that charges a lot more money, and one that does it for the other, so you can serve both markets and make a lot more money in the end.
I actually think
about doing that. I'm serious.
No, I'm
serious too.
No, it is a good idea, because a lot of people don't even realize that you can actually make your site accessible for PDAs and cell phones, or they know you can make it usable on a PDA and cell phone, but they know you could actually make it accessible for it, but you definitely can.
And if you make it accessible for them, it really does serve the same purpose, because I've been looking into making my site accessible for cell phones and PDAs. It's extremely expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And doing that meets all of the criteria that you've already talked about today. It literally does all of those things.
Right.
So I think the design principles are going to be the same for both circumstances.
Right.
If they're going to be the same, then, do one versus the other. Hey, two markets. I like that.
Uh-huh.
I like that a lot. So what do we need to think about with regard to the people with the physical disabilities?
Mainly, that's the area that's mostly focused on when it comes to physical. Now, the one that has the least amount of research on it is cognitive. And that's where it's a balancing act, and they're still researching that one because, see, people who have cognitive disabilities a lot of times, they're trying to find the right mix of graphics and text because, see, a lot of times people who are cognitive, they prefer graphics over text.
Oh, and then that defeats the purpose of the other.
Right, and that's why there's a lot of research. The government, actually, and other web accessibility experts, that's the one area in web accessibility that's been ignored, but there's been ramping up in research, and it's starting late last year coming into this year, and they're really doing a lot of research into it right now. And there's some guidelines that are going to be coming out when it comes to cognitive.
Now, that might be one that you do have to do separate but equal for. You just may not have a choice.
Right, they're looking like to try to how to strike a balance with, because people who have cognitive disabilities notoriously, in all the studies that have been done, they notoriously prefer graphics.
I don't know if that's my cell phone that's doing that, or if that's the show. Rhonda, can you still hear Cornelius okay?
I can hear Cornelius, but you are very fuzzy.
Yeah, yours is real fuzzy.
I hope we don't lose the show, but I'm going to hang up and call it back.
Okay, so I'll keep things going for a minute here. And, the static went away when she dropped. Well, that's going to be interesting to find out what happens. But, maybe for now, Cornelius, in general, as far as, trying to think toward the cognitive site, the needs of the cognitively disabled.
Right.
If you are putting, let's just say, a video, which has a lot of graphics and stuff, and adding the captions to it or the text of what's being said and perhaps a description, that could still serve all audiences because the text of what's happening would help the hearing impaired.
Right.
And the description would help the visually impaired, and having the video there, well, a lot of people like video, but the cognitively impaired folks might enjoy that. Is that kind of the direction that you're taking now with, since we don't have the results of all the research yet?
That's primarily that, and we're also, I've been actually doing some looking at avatar-based, I mean, actually, there's a study going on right now that, you know, when you go to websites and you see these little avatars that talk to you on every page of the website?
Yeah,
oh,
I know exactly what you're talking about, like the sitepal.com little avatars.
Right. They're doing experiments with that to see if that actually helps. They're doing some groups with people who have cognitive disabilities to see if that actually helps.
Now, I would think that those with cognitive impairments are probably not likely to be attracted to all different kinds of websites. There's going to be certain kinds of websites that really need to focus on that,
right,
especially social networks and whatnot, the more socialization type of sites,
right,
as opposed to, say, a site like Directions University that focuses on helping people build businesses.
Right.
Would that be true,
right,
or is my ignorance?
No, that's correct. A lot, there's quite a few people who have cognitive disabilities that are using sites like Facebook and MySpace because they like, especially when it comes to MySpace, because a typical MySpace page is very busy, it seems to be.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Interesting. So let's, one of the pages on your website that I was very intrigued was the one that talks about the development process, and you talk about discovery and information architecture, and you've got kind of a step-by-step process.
Right.
So let's talk someone through that process. Where do they start, and then what do they want to do from there?
Okay, let's say if you're wanting to have your site accessible, one of the first things you do is you want to actually do a little research on the topic of web accessibility, and there's quite a few resources out there on it. You want to actually go out there and read up on the issues that people with disabilities face more in depth, because there's books, there's sites, and everything that have been read about it. I mean, that have been written about it. Now, some business owners, they just want to run their business, and then those are the kind of people that would just come straight to us and say, well, you handle it, basically, because they want to just focus on running their business. But if one thing to do know about web accessibility, it can be slightly technical, and you will have to go in and edit some code for your site. Okay? But one of the first things that you do is you want to actually go to Introduction to Web Accessibility, and I think I may have provided that to you all. There's an introduction out there to web accessibility that's written by the good folks at WebAIM, and it gives you a really, really good background on what web accessibility is and why it's important and the issues that the different disability groups face. And what you would do is you would take notes on what those issues are and the things that, and you could look at your site. Now, the number one thing that you have to do whenever you want to look to see just how accessible your site is there are known as web accessibility evaluation tools. There's automated kind, and then there's manual inspection. Whenever you want to evaluate a site for accessibility, you need to do both ways. Using one of these automated tools that you're going to get a chance to see isn't the only way of doing it. You got to also take a look in depth at the site, because an automated tool can't tell you if a certain color looks right to someone who may have a visual disability.
Gotcha.
Right. Now, a very popular web accessibility evaluation tool that we all recommend at my firm, and I recommend it to everybody, is the WAVE. It's located at wave.webaim.org, and you can type in any web address you want there, and it will tell you not only how many errors the site has, it actually shows you where they're located on the site.
Interesting.
And it basically shows you, it has nice pretty little icons that appear all over your site that show you, okay, this is an issue, this is an issue, this is an issue.
give me that link one more time. Wave.webaim.com?
.org.
.org.
Right. And it's, this was actually funded by the government. This was created using a grant from the federal government. It's ran by Utah State right now. And
I'm going to go check that out.
Yep, it is a very, very powerful tool, and it's the most used one now because of the fact that it's visual. Before it came along, every web accessibility tool was highly, highly technical and required you to sift through lines of code and say it's on this line and all that kind of stuff. The Wave, what it does, it shows you on your site, okay, this is the particular element that's got the problem. And you actually literally see a little icon at the location where the problem is.
That is great.
Yeah, once you discover the issue, then you will go into, and this is where it gets kind of tricky, is you will go into whatever web authoring tool that you use, and you will start going in and fixing these particular issues. Now, if you're using a WYSIWYG one, it's going to be slightly easier than if you're just using something, depends upon like a lot of your blogging utilities, you may have to actually literally go into the code and actually edit it in the code. But things like Dreamweaver, and this is one thing I got to compliment Adobe about, when it started on the Macromedia, when it was still Macromedia Dreamweaver, they did a very good job of adding in the ability to make accessibility changes right in the software. They do very, very well at that.
That's a pretty cool little tool.
Yeah,
yep.
Everybody's impressed when they first see it because they say, like, no, this just makes it real easy to find the problem.
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it? I'm going to have to go play around with that one a little bit.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. And I will put that into the to a blog post about today's show. I'm going to put in that and some other resources that I have.
We have it right there on our we have a big mention of it. If you refer people to the AccessibleNet site, we have a big mention of it in depth on the AccessibleNet site, the AccessibleNet main site.
Okay.
And you can send individuals there, and they can actually see that tool as well.
Fantastic. And that's AccessibleNet.org or .com?
We're .com.
Fantastic. I will definitely go check that out, AccessibleNet.com. Wow,
yeah,
I'm having fun playing with this.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
And there's a tool I learned about from Cornelius previously that is it's an open source screen reader. So for someone, if you are dyslexic or have a visual impairment or you know, even just want to rest your eyes or whatever, it's a free piece of software that you can take up. And I was, pretty excited to learn about that one.
Oh, yeah.
And
NVDA,
yes. Yes, NVDA.org. So that's a really good thing to know about as well, because notoriously, now, the screen readers, I mean, yes, I know a lot of people who actually are sighted who go, you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing if I could actually just kind of let my eyes go somewhere else and listen to stuff if the speech sounds decent or whatever. And so they're kind of interested in it, too. So NVDA, non-visual display, I don't know what the A stands for, .org, you can find an open source screen reading program computer.
And that project is actually partially funded by Google now.
Right.
I have to go check that one out, too. Boy, you guys are giving me all kinds of new stuff to play with today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, new toys. Yes, new web toys.
But the key first thing that anybody who wants to actually start building a relationship with the disability community has to do is they got to get their site accessible. They got to get their site and their elements of their site accessible because basically it's pointless to take out a major marketing campaign targeting the community when you don't have an accessible site to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. That I definitely agree with. You got to know who you're trying to build an audience, who you're trying to build relationships with, and then do the right things to build relationships with them.
Right.
So I got a question for you.
Okay.
Do you know of a tool for web conferencing that is more accessible than what's out there?
There is going to be a new one that's going to be coming out soon that Adobe's working on right now. That is going to be It's going to be doing pretty good actually, when it comes to accessibility, because they're getting ready to market it heavily towards the government market. And that's one thing Section 508 has done really well. Section 508 states that any technology company or anybody who sells technology to the government, they have to make it accessible. So basically that means if someone comes along and has something that's inaccessible and I have something that's accessible and we're going out for the same contract, they have to award the contract to me even if I cost more because I'm accessible.
Really?
Right. That actual law has single-handedly introduced more accessibility features and technology than anything that has ever came before it. It's actually
wow.
Yeah, because of that law, we now have talking copy of it.
Wow.
Yep.
Very interesting.
Right. Yeah, the federal government has to purchase accessible, and they have a mandate to do it, and they're monitored in their accessibility purchasing practices. Through different every federal government agency has what's known as a Section 508 coordinator, and that's that person's job to make sure that that agency is adhering to the law and purchasing accessible products and services.
So by making your site more accessible, you can even potentially get some government contracts, opening up yet another new market.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yep, the government has done a really, really good job comparably to corporate America, because the government is mandated to do so.
Gotcha.
And
that really makes a huge difference, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, I haven't ever looked into this, but I wonder, is there any kind of grant money available for website owners to be able to have their sites redesigned?
Not yet, but there's actually a funding network called the Disability Funders Network. They're actually going to probably be doing something in that area, because you know there's already tax. You already can get a tax break now from the IRS, but actually it's been on the books for a while, if you hire people with disabilities. If a company hires a person with disability and keeps them for so long, or basically has them as a permanent employee, that company can actually claim a tax credit for that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And there's a movement to try to do so, to try to actually really pump up some incentives to get people with disability, to get companies to actually redesign their sites. Primarily, the disability community pretty much has let the market forces basically drive it right now, saying that, okay, you guys really just need to pay attention to the fact that this market has proven itself repeatedly that it is loyal to brands that pay attention to it. So.
Gotcha. Is there any one type of site that is easier to put up? Let's say I say, okay, I really do want to do something to make my site more accessible for people with disabilities. Should I be thinking about putting up one kind of site versus another because it's going to be easier for me and less expensive?
Not in particular. Now, the only kind of site that there's been very little when it comes to accessibility work or accessibility research is gaming sites. They have just not been able to do, on a large scale, accessible gaming, because basically all of the different disabilities that you have to cover.
Gotcha.
They're working on it, but there's nothing really, but just about any kind of site, because as these social networking sites, more of them come out for the disability community. It's basically going to really make Facebook and all the rest of the social networking sites pay attention, because basically people with disabilities are simply tired of not having a site that they can use, because everybody with a disability desires to be able to sign up for a social networking or any site without having to have assistance. And it is very difficult to sign up for Facebook without having assistance or any of these social networking sites, because they won't give up these capaches.
Really?
Wonderful CAPTCHA codes, yes. Our friend Dr. Robin calls them the gotcha codes instead of the CAPTCHA codes, because they're such a pain for many of us. Well,
let me tell you, even as a sighted person, it usually takes me 5 to 6 tries to get through them. So that's not just an issue for people who are visually impaired. I have weird eyes. I'm not legally blind, but I have a weird issue with them that makes it very difficult for me to read those things, and it takes 5 to 6 tries. The other day, I locked myself out of my Google account because I could not get the CAPTCHA code right.
I can understand that. And then when they give you an audio version, I mean, like, I can hear really, really well. And I think they must have gotten their person to do those numbers from the people that do the Chicago subways. You can't even hear it near well, you know?
Yeah, that doesn't usually help me either. I cannot figure it. It makes it harder for me to try and hear it than it is to try to see it. And that's not very good.
Right. No, I fully understand.
Now, in looking at the packages that you offer for web accessibility design, they're based on the number of pages of your website.
Right, up to 30.
The people that listen to this show are going to be people who have blogs, and blogs by design, because of the way that blogs work, where you're putting in articles and whatnot constantly, they can get to be very big. Is each post on a blog considered a separate page, or are you talking about truly separate pages?
No, primarily the way we treat it is because with a blog, the good thing about those is we can go to the root of it, which is the template. We try to price it as the actual pages themselves, because see, with a blog, we can go into the template, and there's a lot of work that actually has to go into those templates. But that's how we primarily do. And the way our project works is you can actually go to the site, use that WAVE tool that I showed you earlier, and actually become an associate of us, of AccessibleNet, which is basically someone who is promoting our project and everything. You can become an associate, use that WAVE tool, find sites, and it's free to become an associate. And when you find actually sites that have issues and you contact them and bring them in as a client, we pay you a commission for doing so.
Gotcha. Okay. And how much typically would a blog owner expect to spend to have their site made more accessible?
Blogs are probably going to be between like $249 to $500, because unless they have like multiple templates, which most blogs don't.
Most don't. You're right.
It's template work primarily. So. Yeah, blogs are going to be more inexpensive than like a full-fledged website. Like an e-commerce site is going to probably be, it's definitely going to be more, because a lot of your e-commerce sites have multiple pages. They may be using a content management system, which that's a whole other issue to deal with too.
Right.
Because there's very few accessible content management systems out there. You can actually literally count them on your hand which ones that are.
And which ones are more accessible than the others?
The big one that you have to have special server to use it, but the most accessible content management system known to man right now is Plone. It's little known, but it's got a massive following, and the accessibility community really, really loves it, because basically they really do a good job of integrating new accessibility features from the get-go into the program. A lot of your traditional programs, they just haven't gotten there yet.
Exactly.
Not something they paid attention to, but Plone, the founder of Plone, is like in numerous interviews all over the internet, and he's done a lot explaining about their dedication to accessibility, and he proactively gets people with disabilities involved in the development process.
I haven't heard of that. I'm going to have to go check them out for sure.
Yeah, it's a big a lot of people may not have actually heard of Plone, but what's amazing is that there's a lot of websites out there that use it, like Akamai, which is one of the biggest web traffic management companies in the world, uses it. Georgia Tech, MIT, there's like thousands of sites that use it.
I wonder if there's any data out there to show you something like how many people are using the internet that have visual impairments versus hearing impairments versus physical impairments versus cognitive impairments. Do you have the market stats broken down to that level?
ASB, which is the American Federation for the Blind, is actually going to be putting out a new study that's actually coming out very soon. It's going to break it down. Microsoft also did some research in that area, too, about people in the different types of disabilities that are using different types of technology. They actually have reports as part of their assistive technology division.
And we just find that on the Microsoft site somewhere?
It's on the Microsoft accessibility site, which is Microsoft.com/enable.
Gotcha.
Yep. Their accessibility department's grown over the years, actually. It started as like a 10-person team, and now the accessibility team at Microsoft is well over 100 people.
Wow.
Yep. The Microsoft is... Now, most people, and the number one complaint I've ever had against Microsoft is you guys have an entire team dedicated to this, yet you still use captures on Hotmail. I can't find a problem.
I don't understand that one at all.
That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Now, Google has done a very good job at integrating accessibility features into their products and services. In fact, Google actually also, about mid-year last year, Google formed its first ever web accessibility team, and they've been hiring like crazy over there. And their job is to ensure that Google products and services, including the PageRank algorithm, takes into account accessibility.
We're likely to see the PageRank algorithm be modified here in the near future take that Google Handicapped Accessible rule into effect.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
So basically, there's going to be, we don't know when it's going to happen, but there's going to be an even worse slap coming down the road.
Oh, yeah, and that one could be very, very serious if May 2007 is any indication.
Oh, yeah.
Because so few sites even consider this stuff. For the couple of students that I had that were affected by the Google Handicapped Accessible rule, it was really an easy fix.
Right.
What we did was, all we did was we took the content that was on the site and we turned it into audio. And if you're using a blog, that's really easy to do with a plugin called Audiogo, Audiogo.com, will automatically take all the content on your blog and turn it into an audio format. And say that again, Linda.
I'm sorry, as long as you don't import it from another feed, if it's all your own content, it goes on there just fine.
Yes. If you're importing from other feeds, there are some challenges in making it work right. You can work. It just takes a while to make it work. And just by adding the Listen Now button with Audio, my students ended up back on the front page of Google. And then it was a matter of changing just a few little details, like changing their font to not smaller than 12 points. Some were using 8 and 10 points, which is just really teeny. And as long as you have that more than 12 points and you've got audio-enabled text, they were right back up where they were before the rule went into place.
Right.
Now, is that truly accessible? Probably not, but at least it did satisfy the rule that Google has.
Right. Right, it was better than what was there before, basically.
Exactly. Probably not enough to make it truly accessible, but it's certainly an improvement.
Right, and a lot of people don't even know that in your web browser you can actually go under your view menu in a lot of them and actually enlarge the text on the screen as long as the font's not locked or anything. You can actually go in there and click on your view menu and there's a text size option. This is in Firefox and in Internet Explorer, and you can literally enlarge the text on the screen to make it easier to read.
Yes, and that's not enough to satisfy the Google rule.
Right, no.
But at least it helps you.
You can definitely do that, absolutely.
Right.
I use that one a lot because some text out there is just so darn small, I can't read it.
Right.
And especially when I was working on computers from my bed where the screen's not right on top of you, it's kind of far away when you're laying down. That was really important to use because otherwise I don't think I would have seen half the stuff on the Internet.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what's your opinion on graphics? Do you think that sites use too many graphics? Do they use too few graphics? Do you want to use graphics or not?
No, it's okay. Graphic usage on a website is okay as long as you're describing, from an accessibility standpoint, as long as you're describing those graphics so that someone who is a screen reader or other types of assistive technology can hear it. I wouldn't make like some sites I see the entire site's a giant graphic. I wouldn't do that, actually.
Okay.
Because for one thing, search engines don't like that either, because basically you really need to have some pure text on that site somewhere.
Yes, you do. Now, do the same rules apply on the public areas of your website and your private areas, like inside of a membership site?
If the general public, if it's a members-only site and people are paying to have access to it, you still need to make the inside of that site accessible because, see, there's still going to be accessing content.
Gotcha. So all the same rules apply there, too?
Oh, yes.
Wanda, is there any other kind of technology that you want to talk to Cornelius about?
There's actually, when it comes to screen reader usage, there's actually quite a few different screen readers that are starting to come out now. But the one that I would recommend the most, if any of your listeners want to actually check out what it's like to use a screen reader, is to check out that NVDA screen reader, because that will allow them to really get a good inkling of what it's like to use the computer and the internet as a person who is blind. And there's another breed of screen reader that's what we call pretty much a lower grade screen reader. It's called a voice browser. They never really caught on, but it's called one of the most famous ones was called IBM Homepage Reader. Have you ever heard of that, Rhonda?
No, I have not heard of that one.
The only purpose of IBM Homepage Reader is it's called a voice browser, and it was and another one. And the purpose of it is primarily just for the web, only for the web and email. That's it. It basically is a screen reader only for the web and email. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are some fairly affordable programs that will help you in being able to read the screen and without having to pay $1,000 for the really good screen reading program.
Right.
I mean, NVDA is one, but there's also one that I have, and it's from the Second Speech Center, that I can take a PDF, I can pop the file name in there, and it will simply turn it into an MP3 for me, because normally my screen reader that I own doesn't do all that terrific with PDFs, and so I tend to not care for them. But this program with Second Speech does help. And, you know, just think about, even if you as a web designer know that this stuff is there and can direct people to things or make sure that it's available or make sure that people can access stuff, it makes a really big difference. That one will not read any PDFs that are like locked or secured. It will not read them. And I did need to get a refund from somebody once because I said, you know, I'd love to read your product, but if you don't have it in like a plain text or an audio format or whatever, I cannot make my screen reader read it. And he gave me a refund, but I really wanted the product. I was bummed, you know, that there wasn't a way to get access to that.
Right. That's a major issue. That's another thing that you have to, whenever you're designing your site, a lot of people think just web accessibility only applies to the site. It also applies to any elements that you have on the site, such as when it comes to downloadable things like forms, Word documents. There's actually methods to make Word documents accessible. PDFs, it takes some work on a PDF, but you can make a PDF accessible. And other PowerPoint files, all those kind of files, this whole accessibility, this is another reason why we advocate utilizing web accessibility experts, is because that's a whole other area of web accessibility, designing your Word documents and other documents to be accessible as well, because basically every element that a customer or visitor to your site would interact with on your site needs to be accessible. And there is a method to make just about all of that stuff is accessible, but it varies based on what technology you're using. If it's a Word document, there's a certain set of things that have to be done. If it's a PDF, there's things that have to be done. PowerPoint, all of those different types have different things that have to be done to them to ensure that they're accessible.
Seems like a lot to think about.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot.
But, again, when you are able to to get help with it. It's just like anything else. Even in starting a business, we all need a mentor. We all need a hand up to help us figure it all out. And with accessibility, it's the same. I'm not going to say that I get everything right all the time. And, you know, the things I struggle with is if you do a lot of things that are by audio, that makes it not work really well for deaf people. And, you know, so those types of every, obviously this radio show, not great for a deaf person.
Right.
No, not very good.
Right, you need transcripts and things like that, and that's why we always advocate for basically saying, hey, if you don't want to do it yourself and you just basically rather just focus on your business, go to someone who has a background in web accessibility, and we can just handle it for you, and then basically you focus on what you do best, which is running your business.
Right.
Rhonda, is there anything else that, any other kind of technology you want to talk to Cornelius about today? You want to talk about cell phones for a little bit?
One other thing I did want to mention to you, when it comes to, you had asked earlier about funding for getting your site to be accessible.
Yes.
There's not funding for getting your site accessible, but there's plenty of funding out there for purchasing assistive technology, which is interesting. Yes, every state in the United States has a what's known as an AT office. It's established under the AT Act, and every state gets money for either grants or loan programs to help people purchase assistive technology. So if anyone has a person with a disability in their home or want to help out someone with a disability, there's numerous resources out there for you to get funding, including the Disability Funders Network, too. They fund a lot of assistive technology-related purchases.
I hadn't heard about that before, but that's great to know. Thanks.
Right, yep, that's the Disability Funders Network, and the link that I gave earlier to disabilityinfo.gov, it has a lot of links to information on assistive technology funding.
Great. So, Rhonda, do you want to talk about cell phones for a little bit?
I wouldn't mind because, again, this is stuff that we're not only disabled folks but just the general public. A lot of times what I find is people at first want to go, I have to make it accessible. That's going to be a lot of money or whatever. And then they start to realize it not only helps this $10 trillion community access you, but a lot of times, I mean, you know, like in the physical world, the curb cut really helps a mom with a stroller, not only a person in a wheelchair.
Right.
And online, the same types of things are true, or with cell phones or any technology. So, you know, just kind of keeping that in mind. And, yes, I would love to talk any cell phone adaptation you're aware of. I mean, I love hearing about the Funders Network because some of the adaptations available are quite a lot more costly for me as somebody who's disabled, and I have so many less choices than everybody else. And, you know, so what can we do to level the playing field there?
Now, actually, also when it comes to some of the cell phone companies, I know that there was supposed to be some funding. There's supposed to be some funding coming from the cell phone industry itself. The wireless industry is supposed to be actually setting up a fund, supposed to be soon, that's going to actually help people with funding those kind of purchases for cell phones.
Excellent.
Yeah, they basically, because see, it has become such an issue in the cell phone industry is somewhat, I'd say somewhat waking up to realize the fact that people with disabilities really exist when it comes to, well, I'm going to actually get some links to everybody on that, because there's, what provider does everyone use?
Boy, probably lots of different ones.
I use them all over.
G1 phone.
The which one?
I use T-Mobile with the G1 phone.
Ah, very good phone.
Yeah, I love it. And it does have a text-to-speech, but even that, when Rhonda went to the store to have them demo it for her, the guy in the store didn't know how to do it, and so she walked away thinking it didn't do it.
That's a major issue there. Now, that's something that they really do need to focus on. They need to focus on because even with the, if you go to any cell phone store and ask them to demonstrate accessibility features, that you pretty much get a blank stare.
You do.
Well, if you call on the phone, you get the equivalent of the blank stare, which is that beep, you know, and I mean, I was in the store for hours dealing with this, and I even brought him the exact name of the software, and they still couldn't figure out how to make this work without saying, okay, you have to touch this thing here on the screen. No, not over there. It's a little bit to the right. I mean, like, if you can't see it, you know, the way that he described it, and we just couldn't seem to make it happen. So I ended up, after already having bought the phone and all this other stuff, having to go through and unbuy the phone and go through all the rest of the rigmarole, when I wrote T-Mobile, all I got was, well, you know, we have a lot of different phones and blah, 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 and it was basically swept under the rug, which made me go, well, okay, so you really don't want my business, apparently, so okay, then. That's where we stand.
Yeah, because see, for Verizon phones, we use they actually, the text-to-speech system for Verizon phones is called Talks, and I'm not sure what it is for the T-Mobile. What is it called on T-Mobile now?
Well, there really isn't a name for it on T-Mobile. There's a couple of applications that are in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
One is called Text-to-Speech. And you just have to be able to go in and look through the marketplace to find the one that you want to use. I use the one called Text-to-Speech because it works with so many of the other applications.
And see, yeah. What's sad about this is the fact that under Section 255, they have to offer, what's sad is that they're only offering the bare minimum when it comes to accessibility.
Yes.
Now, one technology I've actually loved when it came to just that can be pretty much used from any phone is, have any of y'all heard of Google 411?
No.
It's actually a service of Google. It's free business 411, and it's voice activated.
So.
So basically, if you let's say if you need a business phone number in the United States, you dial 1-800 Google 411.
Wow.
And basically, it'll come on, and it'll ask you what city and state, and the name of the listing. Google will not only get you the name and address information for the listing. It'll offer the text information to your phone. It'll text you a map to your phone. It will also connect you to the business for free.
So if I had to disable text on my phone because of not having a way to read them, but that sounds like a nice service for those who can. That's great.
Right, yeah.
That's really handy. I was not aware of that one either.
Right, and it does, and they do it all, and Google does it all for free, no charge at all. So basically you can call it up, any business in the United States or Canada, and it'll connect you there for free.
Wow. Really sweet. And what was that? How do you get there again?
It's called Google 411. It's 1-800-GOOG-411.
Interesting. I'm gonna have to try that. Thanks, Billy. I'm sorry, guys. My husband's just walking in. We've got about 3 minutes left on the show. So, what else do we need? We want folks to know about making their websites more.
The number one thing that they need to know is that they do need to be accessible. They need to commit themselves to, if they want to try it themselves, which we, as I stated, it can be technical. They can start doing some research on the Internet.
I'm laughing. I'm going, don't try this at home like they say on those stunt shows. That's why I was laughing for me. But that was why, don't try this at home. You're a professional.
You're funny. And for folks who want to visit your website again, it's at Butler New Media, and that's at askggg.com/Butler or butlernewmedia.com, as well as accessiblenet.com. It's been great having you here today, Cornelius. I think you really opened our eyes to a lot of issues that many of us just don't think enough about. And I really love what you're doing on the AccessibleNet project. I want to talk to you a little bit more off the air about becoming one of the strategic alliance partners, because I think I've got an awful lot of folks that I can send your way who could potentially use your service.
Okay, excellent.
So thank you so much for being here. And Rhonda, thank you for lining up such a great guest.
I knew you'd love it. This was just as exciting as I knew it would be. Cornelius, thank you so much.
Oh, no problem at all.
Any idea who's up next week, Rhonda?
Well, I'm working out a good surprise, so we will talk about that real soon, and it will be great as always.
Awesome. Just watch for that on our Blog Talk Radio profile at askggg.com/radio. And Rhonda and I will be back next week with another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101, helping you grow your business using relationship marketing. Thanks so much for being here, everybody. See you next week. Have a great week.
Thanks.
Take care, everybody.